I'm just wondering, do you routinely get EGFR on all of your tissue, which is from non-small cell?
We're not. Even at Anderson, the turnaround time can be as much as 4 weeks. The problem often is getting the tissue block. Will there be enough tissue? I'll just give you an example. I just recently treated a woman, an oligo smoker. She had reported about 100 cigarettes in her lifetime, you know, some use in college. And she came in, and she had been operated at an outside hospital, came in with widely metastatic lung cancer, disease in the brain, the spine, multiple lesions in the lungs. And who knew where even to get her block from by the time we get the block and do EGFR staining or mutational status. So we just started her on Tarceva. And by the time the block came in about 2 months later and we analyzed it, she had already had a wonderful response. It did turn out that this patient had a deletion in exon 19, which correlates best with response. So I'm not really using it in daily practice. I'll treat patients with these inhibitors in the second and third line setting, you know, without even worrying about it in the front line setting. I'll think, is there a clinical characteristic that might lead me to treat them? But it is helpful, you know, in some settings, if you wanted to use it as neoadjuvant setting, if you were going to do adjuvant therapy, we talk about adjuvant therapy, it might be nice at some point to know a little bit about the tissue, know if there's gene amplification or EGFR mutation. But we're not doing it routinely, even though the test I know is now available. There's a licensed test that's available in many laboratories around the country. Ed, are you using it?
No, I would have to echo your sentiments on that, Roy. You know, the question I always ask is, and we don't know this for sure yet, is if the woman was an Asian female non-smoker adenocarcinoma and you did send the test and it was negative for mutation, would you not treat her? The answer is you're probably going to treat her. And so I think right now, although we can detect some positivity of mutations in some of these patients, we still don't know whether that's the best test or the complete test. And certainly there are going to be other patients who can respond to these drugs who have phenotypic characteristics and maybe in lieu of some of these mutational characteristics.
Right. The one thing we definitely do know is that the mutation is not the whole story. I think at the end of 2005, there were enough pieces of data from enough places that would suggest that it's one piece of a puzzle that's going to include copy number, protein expression, and probably a whole host of downstream markers and the other HER receptors. So tissue needs to be collected. One thing I think is critical is that lung cancer trials and even patients being treated on pathways, we start to bank the tissue because ultimately we are going to have to correlate outcome with something in the tissue and then ultimately something in the serum that can be measured with a 10-minute assay that's non-invasive. But we're not there yet, but hopefully that can be accumulated so it will be there when the tests are developed.
I'm just kind of curious, in your patient who had the mutation and the great response, did she also get tested for protein expression and gene copy number?
Well, we haven't done gene copy number yet, but we will. Protein expression was just in the normal range. But, you know, the protein is such a variable measure. You know, I like to liken it to, you know, you have a car. You know, the protein is like the car, but if it has no gas, it's not going to go. And really what we're worried about is the gas, which is, of course, the phosphorylation. And very few studies out there in the literature have looked at phosphorylated or activated receptor. And even if someone wanted to do that, it's very hard to do technically because the tissue has to be preserved in such a way that it's put immediately into formalin in the operating room, and that's not often done, or it's very difficult. You know, the time from resection of a lung tumor to the time that it makes it into formalin can be very variable. So those data sets are hard to interpret. So why one versus the other would have differential toxicity, this is why it's good to have a choice. But clearly, this patient is one of those patients who demonstrates response, which is still only in the 10% or so range to these agents. And I would bet if we looked at her tumor, she's either going to have either an EGFR mutation or FISH overexpression. So now the concern would be, how long will this last? There has been the development of resistance seen to these agents, and one needs to just watch her closely. I'd probably scan her, you know, every 3 or 4 months, and at the first sign that something's happening, think about adding something else in.
Ed, any thoughts about this case?
I'm extremely puzzled by a case like this, and I think it humbles us when we see cases like this because of the liver toxicity. Tarceva was branded originally as a more toxic version of Iressa. So to see similar structure drugs, although we know there are other inherent differences, where the lower dosed drug is the one that's causing all of the profound transaminitis and the higher dosed drug is actually the one that's exceptionally tolerable, really is puzzling to me. And I think that makes this a very interesting case. And it teaches us a lesson that indeed these are different drugs, even though you only have very minor structural changes in a compound. It's not all just dose related. And in fact, this may be the reason why you have two positive trials out there, one in lung and one in pancreatic with this drug.